Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And today we are going to be speaking with Dave Bailey. Now, Dave Bailey is the world's leading expert in tennis movement and footwork and the creator of the Bailey Method. Over the course of his professional career, Dave has spent over 30 years studying the footwork and movement patterns of the top tennis professionals, viewing more than 18,000 video clips of professional players in action, carefully observing and documenting their precise movements. Through this process, Dave designed the Bailey Method of Tennis Footwork, which identifies and provides solutions to more than 50 of the most common problems associated with movement, footwork, and balance while playing tennis. Last but not least, Dave has been the footwork and movement trainer to over 21 professional Grand Slam level players. In this conversation, we discuss Dave's background in tennis and we get into some specific details on the Bailey Method. There's a ton of info that we unpacked in this episode and we're eager for you to hear it all. You'll also hear us talk about a new venture that Dave is involved with called Coach Life. Coach Life is the premier online resource for tennis coaching knowledge. Their extensive library covers tennis-specific nutrition, footwork, sports psychology, coaching, parenting advice, and detailed shot progressions. You can sign up for a free seven-day trial at coachlife.com, and listeners of the Tennis IQ podcast can get a special discount on their first-year subscription by clicking on the referral link in this episode's show notes. So with that, here's Dave Bailey. Well, we are very excited to have Dave Bailey as part of the Tennis IQ podcast. Dave, welcome to the show.
I'm very excited. So nice to meet you both.
It's great to have you here, and for people who don't know you, you know, you're probably the, maybe I'm overstating this, you tell me, but maybe the world's foremost expert in footwork in tennis today, certainly someone who is an authority on this and is well-published, is rather prodigious in his work. And maybe just to get yourself introduced to the Tennis IQ podcast community, can you give us some biographical info on, you know, how you got into tennis, how you found your way into coaching, and you know, we can even start to get into how you discovered footwork as, you know, the thing that you really wanted to focus on?
Well, I have to go right back to my dad, because my dad actually, you know, played tennis his whole life. So I come from a very tennis-y background. He actually played at Wimbledon. So he was like top four in the world as a senior. So it was my life growing up, going to all these tournaments. So, and then I played myself at a really high level. We used to go and do a lot of father and son tournaments and things like that. So, I come from a really sort of, you know, tennis loving family. So, that was a really important thing for me. And, I was a phys ed teacher. So I've got this phys ed teaching background. Also registered nurse. So I always looked more at the athletic side of tennis. I always wanted to go into working with the tennis athlete. So that's how I started. And I ended up working at Everts as the director of fitness there, doing all the fitness, and was so fascinated with tennis just because it's got every single fitness component that. So I did that for about 10 years. And then in around about 2000, I met up with a guy called John Yandell, and he had this tennis website called tennisplay.net. And he understood that I was really passionate about the footwork side. So I think the big launch for me was looking at his website, and there was 40,000 clips. So I went through all these clips and started to label everything, you know. So and when I so that then created this language. And so I had pretty much have named every single move that exists in tennis, what I call a contact move. But not only the contact move, I looked at how they got ready, how they moved out to the ball. So I named all the different steps, named all the different hitting stances. When I saw these contact moves, the moves when they make contact with the ball, I looked at, did they bring their knee up? Did they kick their, drop their knee? Did they kick to the side fence? So I named all the different, what I call balance moves. Then I looked at all the recovery steps and break steps. So once I had how they get ready, how they react to it, how they set it up, which I call the responding part, and how they recover, I had this model. And really what it was, I created the language first. I think that was the biggest thing. So I had a name for everything. So I can watch tennis now and say, well, that was a blended move. That was a pure move. That was an improvised move. Because with this incredible encyclopedia that I created through all these clips, I was able to have what I was called a biased eye. So now I could sort of see all these different moves happening in front of me. And then I did a big research thing of 22,000 shots and kind of found out, okay, what's the most common, you know, footwork? What's the in, you know, WTA compared to ATP? So I suppose that was the really beginning of what I call the Bailey method, was creating this language. And then I think the biggest thing that, you know, you said before, I'm still the only person in the world, really, that you can come in and fly into, and I have a really set language. And the big thing is you hit tennis balls. So I think, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. So the R I didn't mention is the reading. And to me, like reading the ball, and this comes back to the mental side as well, because if you can read the ball and know how you want to move to it and know what works for you and what feels comfortable for you, then you start to, you know, get more confidence out there because, but, you know, the research kind of shows also that every player is different. So, you know, when you chart Federer to Nadal to Djokovic, the frequency of these contact moves is very different. So I'm a bit of a choreographer because I have to choreograph what feels comfortable to that, you know, to that player. So I think that's the big thing. I think the big thing for me is you know, another huge thing for me is shadow tennis and learning the footwork by breaking it down into those five R's: ready, read, react, respond, recover. Them kind of understanding which of the R is their weakest, you know, you know, whether it's their recovery or whatever. So they're, but you've got to, it's all about reading the tennis ball. So by putting the tennis ball in, but learning it through shadow tennis first. So they understand. I get actually get in front of them and they follow me, break it down really slowly. But once they know all the different moves, then I can call out the keywords. You know, I can put together a choreographed hitting routine, calling out all these names. So that's pretty much the concept of what I do. People flying in, you know, attacking footwork, rally footwork, defensive footwork, net play, approach shots, volleys, overheads, even specialty shots for the higher end. Because you've got to remember that, you know, different players have different abilities. So, you know, some people, you know, they might come in and all I do is keep them grounded because that's all they can handle. But then other kids, boom, 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 they're like little ninjas, you know, like they can do all these different moves. They're so talented. So, you know, they can do all the different moves. But you know, just one thing that I wanted to sort of talk about is, you know, there's 137 different contact moves, but really there's only four things that you need to do with your footwork, and that's stay grounded and then hit off one leg, snap the hip where you sort of open stance and hip and land with both feet together and transfer from one foot to the other. So I want everyone to kind of know that it sounds like there's all these humongous amount of moves that you can learn, but in the end, I just try and keep it as simple as I can. So that's pretty much it. So.
Yeah, well, I think no, and I think a lot of what you said really resonated in terms of really watching the ball, or reading the ball, as you said. And we've talked about this in other episodes. We had a episode recently where we talked about quiet eye and really trying to, fix our head at that contact point. And we've talked in, with in other episodes, we had Sean Brawley on, who's done a lot of work with Tim Gay from Inner Game of Tennis, and talked about just, trying to track the ball, up until the contact point. Can you talk a little bit more about that and sort of the role that that has in this whole in the entire process,
Yeah,
in terms of the
I
reading
think,
step?
look, I don't want people to think that the only reason they miss is because it's a footwork error. So I feel like, you want to understand the balance. So you want to understand the footwork. You want to understand the swing lines. Yeah, and you want to understand the contact point. So you want to understand if it's a mental error. So, okay, that was a mental error because I lost focus. So a lot of the time, I teach all this footwork, but everything has to match, if that makes sense. Like, the contact move has to match the swing line, has to match the lower body, and then even the direction of the hit. So I feel like all of that. So, the contact point's really important because if you can miss because you haven't got, you can have perfect footwork, perfect balance. You hit to the right part of the court, but you hit it above your shoulder. So, okay, I didn't let that ball drop, so that's why I missed. So I think, it's connecting everything, but you have to understand, which I'm asking my clients a lot of the time. Do you think that was a footwork error? Do you think that was a balance error? Do you think that was a contact point error? Do you think that was, direction of the hit? Because when I watch the pros all the time, a lot of the time it's just they go down the line on the total wrong ball. And I think that's the same sort of thing as the reading. They read that the ball doesn't suit to go to that part of the court. So, yeah, it's all trying to actually connect it all. But I think that's the trying to bring it all together. And yes, each move has a really distinct contact point that really works for that move. And so I think I'm always trying to, and that's what's so important to have a ball. You can do all your sprint training and your ladders and your skipping ropes and all that, which is amazing stuff. As I said before, look, I've got a fitness background. But look, the only reason I came up with the Bailey method was because it just made sense to hit tennis balls. I mean, it just made sense to be able to understand where to contact. It made sense to, know what to do. Because I think everyone, they talk about the swings, but wow, you've got to be able to kick the leg to the right part of the court or drop the knee. It's all connecting. So that's why it's so important to do the shadow tennis. But even when I do shadow tennis, I'll get them to swing and hit the shot and go, oh, that's where it feels really comfortable for me when I hit as a shadow swing. But when the ball comes, they're hitting it in a totally different spot. So I think, yeah, just it's all important. The head still, wow, that's another reason. Your head pulls off the ball at the last minute or so. Yeah, that's why it's so complex. The more that I do this, the more I realize how complex this game is. But I also realize how I've got to try and keep it simple. And that's why sometimes I sort of say, hey, was that a contact point error? Was that a balance error? Was that a footwork error, et cetera?
Yeah, I love the fact that you talked about it as choreography, Dave. Because I often think, Josh and I probably have a biased eye towards what happens between points and what players are doing, and we can often look at that between point time as choreographing what we're going to do. We'll go to the towel, we'll be doing certain things, right? And we'll want to see some consistency in that. So I love the fact that you're talking about that. When I think about footwork, and you talk about this, I think in one of your, at least we're going to talk get into coach life, but in your intro video there, you talk about the wide stance. You go to any tennis academy, and you really will see most players, whether they're juniors or adults, having their feet too close together and not having the proper balance. Can you talk a little bit about just because that's a simple thing, the
And
importance of the wide stance?
it's so funny that you say that, Brian, because I can have these really talented kids And I'll tell you a little funny story about that. Like, I can have these really talented kids that can do all the moves really well, you know, and you know, they can do the front foot hops and the transfers, and they can do anything. But they don't get wide enough and they don't recover. Now, you would think getting wide would be so much easier than to hit a tennis ball and connect the, you know, the contact points with the elbow, you know, get everything right. But I remember this one girl, now, why these moves are amazing, but and she said, oh yeah, I just forget. I forget to split step, or I forget to recover, because oh, I never forget to hit the ball, but I always forget to get wide and I forget to recover. So I think, you know, I always use this analogy, and look, just back to that, you know, Nick Bollettieri, who I consider the greatest, most influential coach of all time, just, you know, how he, you know, brought the academy system in and had, you know, consultants and had this big thing. I just think he's amazing. I was lucky enough to work with him. He always said, they said to him, Nick, you know, if you could give one tip, you know, in your 70 years of training, what would it be? And he said, keep your feet apart. That was his number one tip. So I think, you know, having a wide base, I think it's hard because everyone, you know, when you clean your teeth every day, you've got your feet close together. When you stand and talk to someone, your feet are close together. So it's actually quite unnatural to get your feet really wide. So I think, you know, Nick Bollettieri used to say, do you want to be a Ferrari or a tractor? You know, and I feel like you want to be a Ferrari, and that's the difference. You know, you've got that really wide base. And I want you know, the viewers to understand the significance of the wide base, because when you've got a wide base, number one, when you have to react really quickly to the ball, your foot will drop naturally to go onto the ball of the foot. If your feet are really narrow, the first thing you'll do is step onto the heel, which is going to make you know, I call it foot walk instead of footwork, right? So you're on the heel. The big thing though is the reaction. You just cannot react if you've got your feet close together. And I think the big thing is you can't turn. So when you get your feet wide, you stick your bottom back, it becomes your rudder, so you can turn really fast. I think that's the key, really wide base, but it's so you can react, it's so you can get fast, your first step quickness. It's a timing thing as well. Of course, saying it can be wide, you sort of time it at the right time, but it's the base. It's the foundation of the building, if that makes sense. And people have to give it huge amount of respect. And then it's not just a split step. Like there's reaction split steps. So, you know those Z balls where you throw that Z ball and it bounces off? That's your reaction split step, because you don't know where you're going with when the ball bounces, you know, randomly. But what the great players do, they bypass the split step and they do what I call anticipationary and, you know, anticipationary split steps, where they kind of flow when they're going in the same direction and shift when they go back. So it becomes another thing when you kind of challenge and you want to keep the momentum going. So the great players, they have flow. You know, it's like, you know, when you get on a bike and you're pedaling and you take your foot off and you got to put the foot back onto the pedal. I think, you know, being able to flow on the court and understand that anticipation side, and that's a mental side. That's like you're so switched on to what's happening that you kind of see what's happening down the other end. You're not sort of so focused on you, you're more focused on what's happening down the other end. So you bypass the split step and you just keep this flow going. So yes, sometimes you've got to have that wide base when you have to react, but other times you need the momentum and keep flowing. So understanding the difference between a reaction split step and an anticipationary split step, that's another thing as well, if that makes sense. But yes, the base is just so massive.
Yeah, and before I let Josh ask his question, it's harder to do. It's exhausting when you first try this to be at a wide base all the time because it feels more tiring, like you're putting more effort into it than just standing with your feet together. So it really requires you to put some thought into it and be willing to work hard because the dividends that it pays off are huge. I found it especially helpful when you're volleying, because if you're volleying and trying to hit reaction volleys with your feet too close together, you're often pushed around. Where you have a wide base, you can just absorb anything and really reflect it
And I
back.
think that's a really big point, is the absorb. Like, because I use this analogy. So when people come in and work with me, I get them to think that they're on a trampoline. You know how you're jumping with your feet together like this? And then I want them to say, you know, what's your favorite food? Oh, I love pasta. Okay. So they're bouncing on the trampoline and mum says, pasta's ready. And they come off and they go like this and their feet go wide and you go very soft to get off the trampoline. So, you know, and so you see the softness of that wide base when you get off the trampoline. So it's kind of more of a softness. And I want people to think like with a split step, it's not like a really stiff sort of thing. It's about kind of dropping and being relaxed. Because yeah, you can, I think that's a big part of, you know, all these Hollywood things that a lot of people do on the court, you know, all these extra steps and all the extra, you know, grunting and they're so stiff and think that they need incredible, you know, amount of effort. But you look at Federer, I mean, he's just so effortless. And so, yes, it's about trying to like not waste energy as well, isn't it? Like you said, but, you know, you need to have that really strong base because, but it's, you know, and then I think that's part of it, isn't it? You just got to be relaxed. Like it's just about being relaxed. But I don't mean relaxed like lying on a beach chair and, you know, I just mean a relaxed as in, you know, you're engaged, but you believe. You know, there's this flow. I mean, I love that word flow, you know, like Bruce Lee, be like water. So I think, yes, you want to be wide, but you want to be flowing, if that makes sense. So
absolutely. Could you talk a little bit more about the awareness piece? You brought up awareness a little bit earlier, just in terms of players being aware of the different types of mistakes that they're making, right? Whether it was a mental mistake or whether it was, you know, reading the ball or whatever it may be. Could you talk about the sort of awareness process, both in terms of players recognizing the mistakes that they're making, but also as they start to learn some of these different footwork patterns, you know, the awareness of whether they're doing the patterns properly and whether they're, you know, essentially moving their feet and, you know, in control of their body in the way that they want to be.
So I think going back to the shadow tennis, I think, you know, if you do shadow tennis, like it's so hard to be aware when the ball's coming at you, you know, like you've got so little time. So, you know, and I feel like in tennis, we don't respect shadow like, say, boxers do or like golfers do. And I think if you understand the five R's, like ready, read, react, respond, recover, and you do the shadow when you slow it down. Okay, you know, understand. Okay, I understand my awareness of having the wide base. You know, what are my steps to the ball? What's the balance move? What's the recovery move, etc. I think that's an awareness of actually understanding what they're doing. Now, you don't want it to be paralysis by analysis. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff that just happens naturally. But, you know, I want them to be aware of, you know, even what are they need to focus more on, because a lot of the other stuff is happening naturally. But I think for me as a coach, sometimes, you know, what I'm good at is actually telling them what they did when they hit a really good shot. And I really like to focus on their really good shots. I think a lot of the time we're trying to fix. But I want them to know what they did when they hit a really good shot, what they thought when they hit a really good shot. What were you thinking when you hit that really good shot? Because I think it's more important to focus on what you did well and not so focus on what you know, keep on fixing all the time. So, and then I think back to what I said about, you know, look, here's a really important thing about awareness. Like, they're never going to do anything. They're not going to do a footwork pattern if it's uncomfortable. Like, if it's different, okay, oh, that feels a little bit different, but I kind of like it. So I think that awareness of doing things that they feel comfortable about, and different is okay, but uncomfortable is not okay, you know, so they'll never use it. So there's no use in me making them aware of all these moves, but then they're not using them because they feel uncomfortable with them. So I think that awareness of us working together and me communicating with them what feels comfortable for them. So they might do, say, for instance, a front foot hop, but when they come in, they actually slide their feet together and do a totally different move. And I'll say, you know what that's called? That's called a replacement step. That looks really good to me. And they say, oh, I really like that one. So the awareness is more them doing what feels comfortable to them, what works for them. Because when you know what you feel comfortable with, you will respond to that ball and go into the net with confidence because you know what you like. If you're confused or you're not sure what move to do, then you hesitate and you don't go in. Like, does that make sense? So I think a big thing is, you know, making them aware of what they like, and every player is different. But, you know, back to the contact moves, you've got the name of the moves, but every move has, it has a tactical intention. So this move, I hit heavy. This move enables me to hit with disguise. This move enables me to take the ball early. So I think that's really important with an awareness point of view, is what that contact move actually does for you as well. So, I want to hit heavy to the backhand, I'm going to use this move. I'm going to approach the net, I'm going to use this move. I'm going to use a short little angle, but this one works for me. They might try three or four different ways to hit the angle, and we find out, okay, you hit a lateral hop, that's the one for you. So I think the big thing about the awareness is, like you said, choreographing at what works for them, and that gives them confidence. Takes away. That actually simplifies it. I'm telling you, it simplifies it, because there's not this, oh, what do I do on this one? What I do? And so many people are, they're really good on certain balls, but you feed one tip to their backhand and they're totally lost what to do. And I always know, because I feed a ball to them and they do seven different things in a row. I do this one and they do that one. Well, surely there's going to be one of those that is going to feel more comfortable to you that you try and do all the time. Because one thing that I find with the great players, they do the same thing every time. No one better than Djokovic. He just uses his meat and potatoes 80% of the time in the tiebreakers. He's not out there to entertain you. He's just going to do what he does incredibly well, doing all the moves he feels comfortable with. And, you know, he's that helps him so mentally because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And what works for him. So
we often talk about players trying to practice and perfect their A game. And it's, I think it's important to realize that your footwork moves are part of your A game.
Yes.
And that they should be practiced. You mentioned Bruce Lee in the idea of learning individually. So you wrote a blog post, short blog post a few years ago.
Wow.
In which you,
a few years ago. Well done, Brian.
You have a Bruce Lee quote about, you know, learning martial arts. And I think this is probably part of your philosophy of what you just described. Research your own experience, absorb what is useful, reject what is useless, add what is essentially your own. I think it's really kind of encapsulated what you just said earlier, which, you know, to Josh's question regarding awareness. And I think it's really important that we do make this our own. We make it part of our A game. Yeah, if I'm the kind of guy who hits high and heavy, all right, well, that's, I'm going to want to work on some of that stuff.
Yes.
I feel good.
Yeah.
Good
and
about
I've always
that.
Said, people always say to me, you know, they say to me, who's your favorite player? Okay. Who would be your role model to teach footwork? And I say, well, if I was Bruce Lee, I would hit a 2 foot pivot like Serena. I would hit a 1 foot pivot like Rafa and a front foot hop like Roger. So, you know, because they've all got their own signature moves. And I think that's where Bruce Lee, I mean, I watched this great dog. I mean, I love Bruce. I just, but I watched this great documentary on Bruce Lee, how Bruce Lee changed the world, how he changed the world. I mean, please, if everyone get a chance, one of my favorite things I've ever watched. But just, he was so forward thinking with everything that he did. But again, he had his own style, right? And so he created his own thing that worked for him. And he liked things, but then he said, you know what, but I don't agree with that kick on Taekwondo. That doesn't make sense to me. And look, to me, that's probably the biggest thing I took from Bruce Lee with my philosophy to what I do was just do what makes sense. Like, it made sense to hit tennis balls. It just makes sense that, like, I can do all the sprints and all and ladders and look, that's amazing, but I just feel you get really good at running through ladders, which is great because it breaks it all up. But in the end, you know, it's hitting tennis balls. And, you know, my definition of tennis IQ, that's my definition, you're a bit more experts than me, but, you know, it's just being able to make great decisions in real time. And I feel like if you kind of worked on all these moves and you know what works for you and where you like to hit it, it makes the decision process much, much easier, you know. But the thing is, like you said, you've got to use your meat and potatoes on the more important points and throw in your little rhythm breakers that you don't do that much, you know, your higher risk shots at the less important points, you know. That's my opinion. You know, I don't know if you're going to go for a big, you know, slam dunk, Pete Sampras slam dunk on match point. But, you know, I just feel like, yeah, that score awareness is so important as well, you know, with all of this. So, but yeah, I love Bruce Lee. He's been a huge influence in my thinking. I think it was more his philosophy and his way of thinking that I studied a lot more than, you know, his actual, you know, I've got no interest in martial arts, but. I just love his passion and how he just also, you know, wanted to bring martial arts to, you know, to he's the best marketing person in the history of martial arts I've ever seen. He brought just this awareness to martial arts that, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger brought to bodybuilding. So, you know, so yeah, I love Bruce.
So a lot of players, and I think myself certainly included, have had the experience of maybe feeling nervous or tight in a match and mm-hmm. seeing their footwork start to really get tight or slow down or change in certain ways. Could you talk maybe a little bit more about that in terms of, you know, the impact of nerves, pressure, tightness on footwork and maybe some suggestions that players can incorporate? To try to come back to you know to more of an ideal footwork or at least a better version of you know of the type of footwork that they aspire towards.
Yeah, I mean, I had an interesting story just on that because I remember I had this father that really liked all the names of the moves and actually brought his son to me, and the son ended up wanting to go to this, you know, Division I school that he always wanted to. And so anyway, it came down to, he got into the final match that was the number eight. Whoever won this match got into the college of his dreams. And it was a 12-point tiebreaker. And the coach said to him, whoever wins this tiebreaker is in the team. Whoever loses this tiebreaker goes home. And so the father said to him, just think about your moves. Just go out there and just think about your moves. And I think he won the tiebreaker like 12-2 or something. Now, I'm not saying, but what the point was that he was thinking about his footwork. And I think the big thing about when you're thinking about your footwork, it really gets you very engaged in the moment. So I think if you're getting nervous and you're thinking about, you know, the moves, it's going to help you because I think a lot of the time, you know, and you're more experts than me, but, you know, the mind starts going off the court. What's mum going to think about? What's going to happen to my UTR? You know, exact. So their mind is going off the court, whereas I think if you can think about your footwork, but, you know, you don't want to be thinking of, you don't want to be to think of all the five R's. It might be just whatever resonates with you. Like, do you think about the move or do you think about the timing of the split step or stay up on your toes? But what it's trying to do is get you really engaged, you know, and keep you like within the moment. And I think thinking about your footwork is so important because when you get nervous, you lose energy. And I feel like having that energy and thinking about it keeps your footwork up. And one thing that I find too is people get really hypnotized by their opponent. Like if the opponent has really bad footwork and bad energy, they tend to get hypnotized. You know, suddenly you play the number one seed and the number one seed's down like this and you've got, I'm going to match that person as well. So I think it's, you know, trying to keep your feet moving and be very engaged and keep the energy up. Because if you said to me one word that I feel is really important is energy. And one way to keep your energy is keep moving your feet and keep engaged, you know, like keep up on your toes and show, because you know, when you're moving your feet and when you're up on your toes and you're wide, it's kind of like incredible body language that you're sending down to the other end of the, you know, down to the other end. So I think, you know, sometimes you've got to fake it to make it, as they say, you know, but it's all about showing that energy and that positive body language. And Of course, you know, you got the fist pump and the come ons and everything like that. But I think you can also show that with your footwork. I mean, people just what I'm trying to do in this, you know, in the world of tennis is just give footwork the respect that it deserves. Like it deserves so much more respect. So does the mental side. You know, it's all not all about swings. And so I think, keeping the energy up and also the simplicity of knowing what you like to do on the court. I think that actually keeps it simple. You know, when you know, okay, I get pushed back and I went at the ball, that I'm going to use this move instead of just doing whatever. So I think sometimes having a really, I have all these what I call striking squares on the court. And so you strike on all different, like a chessboard. And, you know, wherever the ball comes, you feel comfortable to do this move that works for you. Now, of course, it's not always going to be perfect. And sometimes you've got to improvise and find a way to get it back, of course. But I think that story about thinking about your moves when he was really nervous, I think helped him.
I think a similar situation that players face, and maybe even this player was facing that then because it was perhaps a third set, is you begin to get tired. You mentioned energy as like the thing. But, you know, as soon as your mind sends messages of getting tired, things can start to break down. And it would seem to me, if I could guess what your advice would be to, again, focus more on the moves, try to maintain your discipline around that, right? Because it'll help. But it's almost like when times are tough, you need to follow the protocol even more strictly, right? What else would you say to players who may be feeling tired in a third set? Maybe it's their second match of the day, and they're starting to believe, yeah, I'm losing energy. I'm starting to get a bit tired.
Well, I think the breathing is really important, you know, like to keep the breathing. And like I talked about before, I think it's just about getting the foundation right. Like I think if you can get the really wide base, that's a really important thing. And also understanding that, you know, I'm talking about all these moves, but also I'm also talking about efficiency of movement.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there might be some moves, for instance, like, you know, I was, at the very beginning here, I was talking about the four things that you need to do, okay? So, you know, stay grounded, hit off one leg, snap the hips, transfer. Now, when you're transferring, so you can imagine you're going from one foot to the other, which takes a lot of energy. If you were going back and you could just pivot on both feet, and that would be less tiring than doing the more. So, you know, maybe even it could be, if you get to a point where you're using more simpler moves when you start to get tired, they mightn't be as efficient. You know, you see like that, like Raducanu comes flying off the ground and Serena's just like, she's so grounded and low. I know that's different body types, but, you know, when you start to get tired, then maybe, you know, you simplify the moves and use moves that require less energy, which is fine. Like it's just, you know, you sometimes you might, okay, oh, I'm not going to run around as much because that's going to make me more tired. But I trust my back, and so that's okay. So, you know, and I think another big thing is, which is another, you know, can of worms, but, you know, just really, you know, taking your time. Sometimes, you know, I've seen so many people lose, lose because they haven't got their nutrition up or they haven't hydrated enough. So, a lot of the time too, they've got to make sure that they're better at that. They've got to keep fueling themselves and keep drinking. And there's all these, you know, things that can also have an effect on their energy levels as well. But and then the other thing is too, like I feel like, you know, what I think the ultimate to be a player is to be a complete player. And a complete player is they've got all the tools to make their opponent uncomfortable. But, you know, sometimes, okay, I've got to keep the point short. So now I've got to use more aggressive contact moves. I've got to come into the net and try, I've got to be more aggressive off my return. I've got to maybe take some more balls out of the air. So I think it's, you know, going to plan B when I start to get more tired and maybe even being a little bit more offensive to keep the point short. So, and understanding what moves enable you to do that.
I think that totally makes sense. So what I'm hearing is that, you know, because I think there's sometimes this, I don't want to say a battle, but there's, you know, I think the stage of in development where players are maybe more conscious of things, right? Whether it's learning a new skill, right? Whether they're trying to change their forehand, let's say, or work on their kick serve or their footwork. And they're more conscious of it, they're thinking about it. But at a certain point, it becomes part of what they do, becomes part of their system, part of how they play, becomes more unconscious. And so do you suggest that, whether it's moments of stress, whether it's moments of pressure, or just in big points in general, that players are really thinking about their footwork, or is it more about trusting it at that point, trusting it and sort of, do you get what I'm saying?
I mean, I feel like, because I just did a, I did a, my last, next to my last post on my Instagram, right, was on Djokovic, and it was on this 80-20 rule, where, 80% of, like from McDonald's, 80% of their income comes from 20% of their menu. And I feel like, so I wanted to look at that with Djokovic. So I looked at Djokovic. And he hit, let's keep it simple, like he hit 100 different moves, but he used only 20 of the moves 80% of the time. So 20 of the moves 80% of the time. So I think I mentioned a little bit before, like I think understanding what moves are really high percentage and what direction of the hits on the more important points is really important. So I always feel like I like to work on my footwork in playbooks and understanding playbooks, like so neutralize, build, take control, hurt, finish. But there's certain moves that are a lot less risk. So I feel like when I look at Djokovic, he uses his moves, one of these 20 moves, 80% of the time in the tiebreakers, especially on the clutch moments, he just plays really, really high percentage contact moves. So, there's some contact moves that are really, that you just move the ball around, you shape it with a lot of shape. There's other contact moves where you're, hitting with disguise is much more risky. So I think part of the game management is, using the moves that you feel very comfortable with and that you know are working. They're really big. They sit down at the change event and say, wow, this is working really well against this player. I've got to do this on the more important things. So it is really that awareness of what moves a high percentage and what you feel comfortable with, and maybe use some of the more higher risk moves at different parts of the game, like love 15 or, 0-0 or whatever. So if that makes sense. So it's just it really is an awareness of the different moves and what each move can do from a tactical decision point of view.
Yeah, and how that integrates into your game and what you're trying to achieve,
Yes.
right? Yeah.
Yes.
You mentioned trying to give footwork its due, in tennis, and because I think it's really something that it can either limit your potential or help you to achieve it. And a few years ago, Andy Roddick said on Tennis Channel, he was asked a question: what's the difference between an elite college tennis player and an elite professional? And he said there are two things: consistency and footwork. And he said, of course, the footwork leads to more consistency. I would love for you to talk a little bit about why people should really invest in their footwork as a means of opening up their potential as players.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's so athletic. I mean, everything's got so much faster nowadays, and the ball's coming deeper, the ball's coming wider. So you need to be able to incorporate some of the more advanced footwork things, like because you just don't have time. So, to be able to hit that open backhand and get out there quick enough. I mean, if you can't reach it, all your technique and all your mental skills don't even exist. I mean, that's what I want them to understand. Like, if you can't get to the ball, so Nick Bollettieri always used to say that, like, if you can't reach it, you can't hit it. So the techniques of being able to get to the ball are just, to me, I mean, that's what everyone's talking about nowadays. Less time, strings are better, more technology, better understanding of biomechanics, because better strategy because you can watch all the videos, everyone now, and work out how to, like, it's just, there's so many advantages now. I mean, even the tips that you have access to, like podcasts like this and, tips that you can get every day on the internet. It's crazy the amount of information that you can get. So I just feel that, it's such an athletic sport. It's getting faster and faster. So if you can't move really well, I mean, I think Federer said a similar quote, didn't he? Like that's the big thing that's happened in the last 20 to 30 years. Everyone's moving better. And if you can't move better, it's yeah. So and I get it. I feel like there's some athletes like the Williams girls that have got this amazing fast twitch fibers and they've just got this athleticism. But it doesn't mean that, I get a lot of really good players coming to me, but I always kind of get a lot of bad players coming into my clinics because they really need that footwork to be fixed and they really need to understand it a little bit better. So, but it's hard because, like you were saying before, you need to, and this actually changed my life, this one quote. Okay. So, Mary Pitts, I was at Bolitaris in the 1995. She just won the French Open. And she said this, I never forget it. She said, you know what? For 1 hour every day, I go out onto the court and all I do is think about my footwork. And that has helped me enormously. So you go out there and you've got to think, and that's kind of what I do. You come to me and you're thinking about your splits and you're moving to the ball and your recoveries and all that sort of stuff. So my advice to the readers is sometimes don't even play points. Don't even play, just go out and think about your footwork. So it becomes, like you were saying before, Josh, like, it becomes without thinking, the split steps there, the recovery's there. But I equate it to playing the piano. Like you got to learn the keys, this one, and then suddenly put two hands in, and suddenly you're putting up here, you're doing this one, and then suddenly, okay, now, oh, give me level four. I can play level four, but I can't play level seven. Now I'm getting to a point where, oh, I can hear music and I can play it. And eventually I can do the Taylor Swift. And I can play my own, I can write my own music. But I think tennis is similar in that way with the footwork. You've got to work really, really, really hard for it to happen that it doesn't think. And everyone says to me, oh yeah, footwork, it should happen naturally. You shouldn't think about it. Well, let me say, I think about 1% of the population has good footwork where they don't have to think about it. So, you need to actually go out there and really think about your footwork. And my advice would be, and that gives you confidence. Like if someone comes to me and they spend 4 days on their footwork, you don't think, I don't even know if the method works. No, the method does work, but they go back and they've done 4 days straight of footwork, surely they're more confident with their footwork because they've worked on it. You can't pass a math exam if you haven't gone and done the study before the math exam. You go and you study really, really hard before the exam. You look forward to the exam. So I feel like if you really work on your footwork, you're excited to go and show everyone how good your footwork is because you've worked on it. So.
I think that all makes sense, and I know we want to hear, just in terms of what you're doing and sort of the process that you work with athletes both in person. I know you do a lot of work at the National Tennis Center down in Orlando, and also now with Coach Life. I guess one final question before diving into that, or at least one final question that I have. Is what would you say, for the players listening? And I know there's, players of all different levels that listen, adults, kids, parents, coaches. What would you say are maybe the two or three biggest, biggest or most common mistakes that people make when it as it relates to their footwork? I know you talked about having a wide base. So yeah, just curious what maybe the you find to be the most common mistakes that people are, club players, junior players tend to make with their footwork.
Well, I think a lot of the time, I think a lot of people look at the target too early. So I think it's really important. I feel, look, I talked about all those 137 moves, right? But really, there's only two things. You're either grounded or you're coming off the ground. And I got this from, I think, the eye coach, the eye coach, where they get it, where they said 10% of errors can come when, you're not watching the ball. So I think really watching the ball and finishing the swing if you're grounded, or landing, then looking. That's a really good little thing because then you're not looking at the target. I think the other thing is to be really aware of your balance. Like, I think a lot of the time people tip, sometimes you get someone who's really, really fast, but they're recovering halfway through their shot. So another really important thing is kind of like swimming. Finish the tumble turn before you push off the wall. Or finish the flip turn, I think you're saying, and I'm Australian. But finish the flip turn before you push off the wall. So I think, really finishing the shot. And you say to me, I'm a footwork person, but really I'm huge into balance. So we're talking about keep footwork to respect that as well. Balance is really important. So you've got to really, and that balance will come by keeping your head still and finishing the shot. The other thing is too, you want to kind of match the upper body to the lower body. So you don't want the lower body to be doing something totally different to the upper body. And then also be aware of, making sure you hit to the right part of the court. But I think, balance, the wide base is really important. And then also, probably my number one tip of all, because I was asked this the other day, ready, read, react, respond, recover. Give all those the same amount of respect. So the base is as important as how you move the ball and set up the stance. It's important of the move that you select and then the recovery. And so that's why I like shadow tennis, because I feel if they do shadow tennis and they're doing shadow tennis, that they're putting those 5 Rs into every time they shadow. Because a lot of people do their shadow swings, but they're not doing the split, the turn, the shadow, the return, the recovery. So the other thing is to, think about those 5 Rs, give those 5 Rs the same amount of respect, and then get out there and just think about your footwork. Like, just get out there and think about your footwork. Maybe don't play points or anything. Just go out there and think about your splits and your recoveries and all that stuff. I think that's it. But so I would say balance is number one, wide base, and then respecting those 5 Rs.
So let's start to talk about how people can connect with you, Dave. You've mentioned the 4-day thing at the USTA National Campus is something that they can find info for that, I believe, on your website, which we'll put
Yes.
in the show notes.
Sure.
And you're more recently getting involved with Coach Life, a new venture. Tell us a little bit about that. What you're doing there, what people can expect to see there if they decide to get into Coach Life.
So what I did in Coach Life, I'm actually doing a few different things with Coach Life, but what I wanted to do in Coach Life was introduce the 5 Rs and how they can practice it. And I go through it, systematically. So this is how you get ready. This is how you turn. These are the out steps. And we go through the way I did Coach Life was to do it more around those athletic skills. So being grounded, hitting off one leg. So different ways that you can hit when you're grounded. Different ways you can hit when you hit off one leg, snapping the hip and transferring. Now, if you really struggle with the first two, I wouldn't move on to the next two because the first two are really simple. So what I did in Coach Life is I've talked a lot about shadow tennis. So 4 different routines, say it's just like what I call a step down. So a forehand step down, a run around inside out, a run around inside in, a backhand step down. So we can learn those 4 because I'm a really big fan of combination training. So when you're doing your, kind of like boxing, where you go straight, straight, hook, hook, under, like I kind of like having those combinations. So then I have Cadence Brace, who was like, I think she's top 300 now, but she was like, number 4 in the world as a 14-year-old Canadian. So she then demonstrates the moves. So you see actually player demonstrating the moves. So that's what really I've got doing in Coach Life. It's like giving them shadow tennis routines. I think there's 12 of them they can take away. Learn the first one, then move on to the next one, then move on to the next one. It might take you 2 weeks just to master the first one. But I kind of want to do it really progressively. And then Coach Life has also got me to how can we incorporate this into my fitness? So how do you do these contact moves with a medicine ball? Because it's more specific than doing a, a throw-in or a chest pass. How can I use four squares like a ladder, run through the ladder, but how can I do the contact moves through the ladder? How can I use it with resistance equipment? So I'm sort of trying to bring in some fitness things. And of course, you know, at the national campus, if I'm doing a shot of the day, say it's a front foot hop or a transfer or a step down, we will do the shadow tennis for 20 minutes before we even hit balls. So this is the theme of the day. This is the footwork we're going to work on, because if I have 20 kids and we do all the shadow at the beginning, when they come to my court, they're just hitting, because I'm not doing shadow every time they come back exhausting for me, but also, you know, the theory's done. So I always feel like, what a great warm-up to be doing shadow tennis before you go. What a great warm-up. What a great to put some of these shadow tennis routines into your warm-up before you go and play a match. Do some shadow tennis, not just the skipping and the high knees and the butt kicks. Throw in some shadow tennis as well. So that's kind of what coach life is it's all about. It's introducing all the different moves and then linking it to some fitness as well. And, you know, when would you do the ladder? When would you do the skipping? I'm going to do some tennis-specific skipping where you put split steps in. So using the split, you know, using the rope, it's split. Use the rope, split, instead of just boom, 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 you know, like a boxer. So where they're just bouncing up and down on the 2 feet. So, yeah, that's my big thing with coach life. So, yeah, you'll see me do the shadow, break it down, but also the player hitting to different targets.
Yeah, I've seen the first video. The lesson one is really good. I really, really enjoyed that. And even that gives you so much information. You also mentioned earlier, Dave, Instagram, you're active there, YouTube. Where can people find you on those platforms?
Yeah, so just Bailey Tennis Footwork. So if you just put in Bailey Tennis Footwork, I do have DVDs as well. So I have, you know, so I'll talk about all those moves, but I have the golden 12 moves that incorporate those five that you should learn first. So I have a DVD and a manual that has, you know, photos of each move that people can, you know, they can get that through my website. So that's a good introduction to it. I mean, funny story on that. I got a thing from IMG, and they said, oh, we've got this good little girl that bought your DVD when she was 12 years old, and she uses it all the time. The father loves it. Can you get on a Zoom call with her? Right. The name was Emma Raducanu. So she, I had a Zoom call with her. This good up and coming junior that loves all the footwork and used it since she was 12. And, oh, 2 months later, she won the US Open. Not to do with me, but, you know, she's a good person to watch to really see the cleanness of these pure moves and how she uses them on the court. So, but, you know, back to my, so Instagram, Facebook, same thing, Bailey Tennis Footwork. I have a YouTube channel, and I think I was speaking to you offline about over the pandemic, I put 12 shadow videos together with my, see, I always find if you do shadow, it's better if I'm like, have my back to you, because it's easier for the follow than, you know, me facing you. So that's free. They can go and get all these shadow videos off my YouTube for free. That's a great start, just a start of, you know, practicing something, you know, practicing the shadow tennis at home. You know, people put it up on a big screen and they do it off the screen because I have my back to them. And then eventually they take the screen away and just have my voice. Because a big thing of my teaching is ready, step, split, turn, shuffle forward, drop the knee, bring the leg through, nope, come back. So, you know, some people are very visual, so they will, you know, they'll follow me, but other people are auditory. They like the names of the moves being called out. So I try to do it to suit, you know, different, you know, learning styles.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So, Dave, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your wisdom and helping to promote the importance of footwork in tennis and learning and improvement. Thanks again.
No, I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Well, that was an awesome conversation with Dave Bailey, and a lot of takeaways. To me, one of the biggest ones was just learning a little bit more about his method, the five R's: ready, read, react, respond, and recover. And I think, you know, to me, each of them really connects to different aspects of the mental game, whether it is, you know, the focus piece, whether it is, you know, just how you're reading the ball. And this is something we've talked about with Sean Brawley, and, you know, he's done work with Tim Galway and, you know, the Inner Game of Tennis, and just the importance of that piece in particular. But what I like about the 5 R's is that it helps a player move through the different stages and progress, go through a progression in a logical way. And I think this can be absolutely done in a tennis lesson. This can be done in a footwork lesson. This can be done in the mental game. So I think just being able to go through a progression like that and be able to sort of learn step by step and make progress step by step is really important. And he talked about how even really high level players, right? Pro players, are still going through those different steps, those different progressive drills. And I think it's, that people that are listening to this, whether it's players or whether it's parents or coaches, can think about how they can, sort of go through these steps in their own games or in their kids' games or the players that they coaches, their games, and just think about how, which of these steps are maybe lacking more. Which of these steps is it the reaction piece? Is it the recovery piece? Is it the ball reading piece? And then, once you start to understand which aspect of that might be deficient and could maybe use work, then just understanding that there are different drills and training that could go along with that. But understanding that, it really is about having all of these different pieces in order to have the best possible footwork. So really love that conversation. I think there's an important connection between the mental game and footwork. I think when a player is tanking, you can see the result on their footwork. When a player is really locked in mentally, emotionally, physically, you could see the result on their footwork. I think, footwork and the mental game are highly correlated. And I really like Dave's method of really breaking it down in a specific way through these different steps. And I think players, coaches, parents can all take a lot out of this.
For sure. And I think, if we extend the 5 R's, then we talked a lot about the contact moves and, all of the ones that are there and how to learn them. And Dave spent a significant time talking about developing awareness. And one of the things that I like in his method, Josh, that I think we would both agree with is it's really about finding what works. Not so much about fixing things, but it's understanding when something works and reinforcing that and making that part of who you are. We discussed a Bruce Lee quote that was a little bit more generic, but we could apply it to footwork in terms of, find the parts of this that are useful, find the parts of it that are not useful, and then start making this your own. And then incorporating that into your style. He had a really cool example where he said you could feed somebody a deep high backhand, 7 times in a row, and they'll go to that ball 7 different ways. And the idea is to figure out, knowing what kind of shot you want to hit, what is the appropriate contact move associated with that, and then you practice them together. And he mentioned, what does Novak Djokovic do in a tiebreaker? Well, he goes to his signature contact moves and he's super disciplined about that, and he doesn't make any mistakes. He gets into a lockdown mode. So I really like the connection of your footwork patterns, your contact moves to your style of play, and then practicing that all together. We've talked a lot about the A game, and we mentioned this to Dave as well, that it's really important to be practicing your A game. And now we have a language about talking about your contact moves and how they are a part of your A game. So I just found, Dave to be just this really super thoughtful guy who's gone very deep into an aspect of tennis performance that's very important, but maybe hadn't been mined so much by others in the past. And now we have a really good language to talk about footwork with, a professional like Dave or even your coach about how to work on these things. So as a listener, if you're interested in working with Dave Bailey and seeing his videos on Coach Life, be sure to click on the referral link in the show notes to sign up for your free 7-day trial. And you can also get a special discount on your first year subscription to Coach Life by using our referral link and the discount code in the show notes. Coach Life is the premier online resource for tennis coaching knowledge, so be sure to click on the link and check it out for yourself. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening. And thanks again to Dave Bailey for joining us. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.